How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
I am so excited to announce our new platform launch, the49ersrush.com. We've been active on Patreon for years, and we're still going to keep that community going, but the49ersrush.com has everything Patreon offers and a bunch more. You want to watch player breakdowns? Guess what? You click that. It's filtered based on players. You want to see Javon Hargrave, what he brings, some CMC tape broken down, Ayuk, Jair Brown. We've got hundreds and hundreds of tapes on. Now, you want football 101. You want to learn scheme? Guess what? We've got every single offensive, defensive, special team snap. Head over to the49ersrush.com, sign up, join the community, and plus we got a 7-day free trial. So
I'm for the 49ers Rush Podcast. And here's your host, John Chapman.
What is going on, faithful? We are coming to you guys. It's the 14th. It's 10 a.m. And I could not be more pumped, because when the 49ers have divisional games, I think that's what it's about. We only get 6 of them. And so this is one of the 6. And I'm so pumped here with the man himself, Ant from 49ers Cutback. How are we doing, Ant?
Doing good. This has been a fun week. After all the stuff that happened in the game. But the good news is the 49ers came away with a win, and it's a big one now. Divisional games mean so much more, and this is going to be a big game against the rival Seattle Seahawks. So I'm excited about it, and I'm always excited for the 49ers' opportunity to whoop on the Seahawks, and I'm hoping they get it done this week as well.
I love it. And so, like, again, if you're new to the coach approach, we do this every Thursday, unless I'm flying across country. That's about it. Sorry about that last week, guys. But this is a time where we go back and we look backwards to kind of some of the things that jumped off of the coach's tape to us, some of the scheme, schematic stuff. And then we look forward. What do we want to see? How should they approach the game upcoming? All those things. And I want to say thank you to David. Appreciate the positivity, David. He says, best show of the week. Looking forward to it. That means the world to us. Now, right here, Trainwreck says, ain't going to lie, I'm nervous about getting into the dance this year. And if the playoffs were today, Ant, 49ers are, you know, half a game out of first in the division, half a game out of the last wild card spot. Right now, we're on the outside looking in. But about the 49ers playoff chances, are you feeling bullish? Is it going up, or are we still kind of in no man's land?
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling more comfortable about their chances to make the playoffs, because we've seen the wild card team start to come back. There for a while, they looked like it was going to be tough to get in because every wild card team was staying way up there. But we've seen some of them start falling off. The war of attrition is catching up to some. For some, they never were that good. They were just playing better than their roster was showing. And so now the 49ers have an opportunity, but they have to win games. It starts with Seattle. It starts with division. But the two games coming up, one versus Seattle, then Green Bay, if you win those, you put yourself in a really good position to make the playoffs. And so, yeah, I'm starting to feel comfortable with it. You get Christian McCaffrey back. The offense will get more in sync. You can tell Brock felt more comfortable with McCaffrey. So I like their chances to make the playoffs now a little bit more than I did a couple weeks ago, where it was starting to feel a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it was. We always get to that point where it's just like, ooh, maybe this isn't as good as we think. But the 49ers find a way to get in. And, you know, I say this all the time from a coaching standpoint. Once you get in, anything can happen. Anything can happen. And so that's what you got to focus on. And the easiest path for the 49ers to make the playoffs is to win the division. The wild card, that's there, but there's a lot of quality teams with quality records, and you got to get to tiebreakers. No. Win your division. That's what you have the most control over. Then you get to host a playoff game. Then we kind of see what goes on. So, yeah, right there. Quinn, can the Niners get it together, stop the injuries, and improve our special teams? Man, I feel like the injuries, we're doing okay. Really, Mitch Wisnowski is the only new addition that is kind of in question. Kyle Shanahan talked about how Nick Bosa played through the hip pointer last week. I actually thought Nick Bosa was not good. Like, am I allowed to say that? Tristan Wirfs owned Nick Bosa. Like, completely destroyed that man play after play after play after play. Then Tristan Wirfs got hurt. Nick Bosa started to look a little bit more like Nick Bosa. But, man, Wirfs stock up. Bosa, I know he's dealing with the injury, but did you see that as well on the tape? That's like in my like miscellaneous notes. It was embarrassing. He got manhandled one-on-one continuously by Tristan Wirfs. How much of that is a worry meter on Nick Bosa versus the injury playing through whatever?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was injury. You could tell he just wasn't as good on his get off. He was dragging a little bit. He wasn't putting together his moves. He was kind of missing a little bit of the power speed combination. It wasn't the same Nick Bosa, but everybody else still sees Bosa on the back of his jersey. So the way they were playing everyone else was still benefited by how Nick Bosa was out on the field. So he wasn't perfect, but he still had the opportunity to close that game out if he would have just been able to get Baker Mayfield to the ground. I don't know what he was doing there, but that's still still Nick Bosa having opportunities to make things happen. He's still going to be effective, but right now with the injury, he's not going to be as effective as we've seen him.
Yeah, I think it's going to take some time. Now, the good news is you're playing against the Seattle Seahawks, who Tristan Wirfs, they do not have. They're getting back Abraham Lucas, their right tackle. Charles Cross has been good. It's not like he's a bad dude or anything along those lines. He's a good player, but it's nowhere near. Tristan Wirfs is probably number two in the NFL next behind Trent Williams, and you're not playing Trent Williams because he's on your team. So get back Bosa healthy. I don't care if you pull back some of his snaps right now till he is 100%, but he's played through it. The second part of your question was, man, are the special teams going to improve? Kyle Shanahan was asked yesterday, man, are you going to start practicing special teams more? Here's what Kyle had to say.
We devote a lot of meeting time and a lot of practice time. So we don't double down on that, the time spent on it, because I feel like we do as much as we can. We have mixed a lot of guys in there. We do feel like guys have gotten better, but it only takes one mistake to cost somebody, and it only takes one person. You know, you look at the Seattle game that we had last time, you know, if you go back and you watch all the film, I thought that was one of our chances to have our best special teams game of the year. You know, we caused two turnovers, got both of them. The only one counted, with the replay stuff. But we had one missed tackle on a big kick return, and then they had that second one, and you just have those two plays, and it can cost you a game. So I do think guys are getting better and stuff, but we got to make sure that we don't make those dumb plays where we can cause a penalty or we can cause a turnover, and those are the things that we really got to clean up.
And, like, I will say this, according to PFF or DVOA, there's a lot of different things you go with. Seattle Seahawks have the third best special teams ranked group. The 49ers, not so much. So where does that fit on your kind of concern scale looking forward to this week with the 49ers and Seahawks? Special teams, like, I feel like it's just going to be there all year.
Yeah, until they prove that they're consistent or they're going to play well, you have to worry about special teams. And the last time the 49ers played a really good special teams unit was the Dallas Cowboys, the number one overall DVOA. They showed up. So maybe they will play up to the level of competition that they're going to go against. Tampa Bay was only 25th, so they weren't very good, and the 49ers made mistakes. But they're unforced errors. These are problems that the 49ers need to overcome, and they just got to be more consistent. They got to be better. They got to know where they're at on the field. And special teams is a huge element in all these games that the 49ers are going to play, because it's a big part of how teams play. It's complementary football. And if the 49ers don't figure the special teams out, it's going to cost them games and potentially a playoff opportunity. So they've got to figure this thing out. I think Kyle knows that. And so I would love to see even a little bit more attention to the special team. Just make sure you shore it up, because if you take care of special teams, you're going to win football games. It's just that clean. The 49ers have been good on offense and defense and good enough to win, but special teams has consistently let them down.
Yeah, it's been an issue. I don't think it's going to change, sadly, but that's okay. So let's transition. Let's talk about things we noticed on tape that perhaps you didn't notice right off the bat. Scheme, play calls, you know, who played well, who played bad, things like that. I'll let you start us off, Ed. Things we noticed from the Bucs game after going through all the coaches' tape.
Well, I think first off was just how multiple Nick Sorensen was on third down compared to weeks past.
That's my number one note. It's my number one note.
He did such a good job this time. There was a lot of times Baker thought he was going to get bunched, he was going to get man coverage, and he didn't. And I think that was a good move from Nick Sorensen. He broke tendency. Anytime you can break tendency, it's going to help your football team out. And I thought he looked like he was more in a groove when he was calling defense. He was doing the right things at the right time, and I thought it was really good that way. Of course, you have to have players execute, which I thought they did a pretty good job for the most part. But it was nice to see Sorensen kind of switch some things up. I love the play where D'Amour Lenore is playing in the cover two, you know, playing the Tampa two. He's the Mike linebacker, the adjustment there. It was just some really cool stuff personnel-wise and with scheme, and I thought it was probably Nick Sorensen's best when it came to coverage this season, which is a great sign moving forward.
Here's my literal notes. I'm going to read it. Quote, the Tampa 2 with Demo run the deep drop mic roll was fire. It was absolutely fire. Got us our first sack. It was just like, oh, what are we doing? I was like, I don't even know what we're doing. Like, Baker had to have been confused, because the way they rolled, it was just, oh, where did this come from? Let's do more of this, please. It was awesome. So the cover two under, I saw in the first half as well, which we haven't done in a long time. We did like a cover two man. We did a cover two under, which was cool. There were a couple spots where it was just like, oof. And again, even when we kept going man coverage, we got beat a couple times on it on third down. But we even got, you know, a significant play on there. So there's positives. I feel like we're getting better, and I do feel like things are trending up. A lot of that has to do with Devondre Campbell. Devondre Campbell, late second quarter, the Bucs are driving. They're inside the red zone. Devondre Campbell made three consecutive plays to make them settle for a field goal. A screen stop, he had a pass breakup, and he had close to a tackle for loss. I don't think it counted as one in the run game, all consecutively. And if you could get the upside play from that linebacker two position, man, he was doing it in man coverage. He was doing it in zone coverage. Dude played very, very well. Now, flip side of that coin, our other man coverage nightmare this year has been Jair Brown. I feel like he kind of returned to the Jair Brown of 2024, which is not good. I saw man coverage mistakes, zone coverage mistakes, alley fills in the run game mistakes, missed tackle mistakes. Like, I really thought, like, I was hoping we were past that, because you had good games from Jair and Devondre Campbell, and it seemed like Campbell has stacked good games. Jair went right back to it. So I'm starting to get a little concerned with the long-term potential slash how much do we want to depend on Jair Brown, because Malik has 100% passed him. It's not even close. But, like, is this a player that you want to be a starter for two more years after this? I'm starting to question that.
Yeah, I think you have to. And I think this is starting to bring up the questions not only about the remainder of the season, which I think he's going to have to play a lot better if he wants to stay on the field, especially with thoughts of maybe Talanoa Hufanga could come back, or now Tashawn Gibson being on the practice squad. They don't have to sit back and wait for Jair Brown to figure it out. Not if you're a championship caliber football team, which they believe they are. But I do think it brings into question if Jair is the starter moving forward down the stretch a couple years from now, because he just hasn't been consistent. I don't think we've seen the growth we were expecting from year one to year two. There was a lot of things in year one you got excited about. We knew there was a lot of holes that he was going to have to fix. I don't think he's taken a big enough step forward. I think we see inconsistencies. There's moments where he flashes, and you're like, that's the guy. That's the one we want. And then there's other times you see it, and you're just like, nope, that's not it. And I think that that's a real frustrating thing for the 49ers, especially in the secondary. So it might be a situation where Talanoa Hufanga ends up being the long-term answer. They might end up trying to bring him back for the mere fact that Jair Brown is not really working out right now. So I do like Malik Mustafa a lot. I think his mistakes are fewer and far between every single week. He seems like he's getting better and better, which is great. But Jair Brown is just too inconsistent right now.
Yeah, I like that. Well said. And Sonia, she says, man, I wanted Mason and Brown to go off this year. Those are two people I was looking for. I think Mason did go off. He did exactly what the Niners needed in that CMC absence period. Now he gets to be the backup, and I think he gets to go back to special teams. Kyle even hinted at that earlier. Like, Jordan Mason has been one of the best special teams players on this team all last year. But now you're starting running back, leading the NFL in carries through like 8 weeks. You got to pull him off special teams. Now with CMC back, dude, 24, get your butt out there. Go make plays on punt, punt return, kickoff, kickoff return. You're still going to have an impact. It's not going to be fantasy-wise. But yeah, I'm with you, Sonia. So we'll see what that is. Right here, Rainier. He says, John, if you were part of scouting, what areas in the defense, offense, how would you attack the Niners? Oh, yeah, screen game, that's huge. But we got better. Sam O made an incredible play against the screen that just they should have had probably 10, 12 yards on that. Devondre Campbell made a good play on a screen. Demo made a good play on a screen. Malik made a good play on a screen. And Campbell, they were running screens. We shut it down. That's been a huge weakness. I would continue to attack there. Offensively, I'm running a five-man wide nine front. And so now I want to kind of channel to another question that kind of answers this, Rainier. I got a question from my friend Brian W. He says, was the 75 yards rushing more on the Bucs committing to stopping the run? Sellout side, or was CMC bad, trying to get his legs back off the injury, whatever else? The Bucs defense committed everything. Right? What did it cost? Everything, right? Like the Avengers meme? That's what it was. Five-man, wide nine on both sides so that we couldn't get the edge, and then they had an eight-man full box. And so when they commit that much, that's why Brock Purdy threw the way that he threw. That's why all the explosive plays, you know, Debo had an explosive passing play. Kittle had an explosive passing game. Jennings had an explosive. Pearsall had an explosive. Like, you commit all those guys, if you beat somebody, there's nobody left. And that's why all the yards after catch, all that stuff is because Tampa was committed. We're not going to let them run the ball.
Thank you, No, the Casio G-Shock. Thanks to its legendary toughness and timekeeping autonomy, it's no secret why the mighty G-Shock has earned its place on the wrist of weekend warriors, first responders, and militaries all over the world. But there's levels to this stuff. And there's a little-known collection of top-shelf G-Shock watches made for folks who crave the very best for everything in life. It's called the MRG. This flagship line of G-Shock watches takes the most cutting edge of tech G-Shock has to offer and blends it with the highest levels of traditional Japanese craftsmanship. We're talking about hybrid titanium and Kobarian case construction with artisanal armor-like flourishes, all honed like the edges of a samurai sword. Every beloved reference in the G-Shock collection gets coveted MRG treatment. From the original square case digital reference from 1983 to the beloved analog Frogman dive watch, all the way up to the newest fan favorite, the MRG B2100, with its octagonal bezel and its wild interlocking beams dial. Discover the full range this holiday season at Topper Jewelers. And while supplies last, mention this ad in 49ers Rush to receive a special gift with your next G-Shock order.
Americans are durable. We take pride in hard work and high quality. American Giant makes durable quality clothing right here in the USA, because what we wear reflects who we are. When you buy American Giant, you're not just wearing the best clothes money can buy. You're helping keep jobs and pride in your own backyard. Premium clothing built to last decades, like it should. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code RIGHTHERE24.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Now, my question to you is, and I know I'm kind of splitting here, we're going to the second half of the show. Do you think Seattle is going to commit to the run the way the Bucs did, or are they going to play it the same way we did in week 6 where we ran all over their butts?
I mean, they might try. I think it would be smart on their part to try to take away the 49ers running game, because if you don't, they're just going to run right over Seattle. Now, the difference is Seattle doesn't have the bodies. They don't have the linebackers. They don't have Lavonte David. They don't have some of those guys on the edge that are going to be able to do it. They do have a good interior defensive line. Seattle does, but they don't have Vita Vea either. So Tampa Bay made a concerted effort to stop the run. That's for sure. 5-6-man line sometimes. I think the 49ers missed a couple opportunities. Running backs missed some lanes and some opportunities where they could have read some blocks and got some yards. But for the most part, yeah, that's what Tampa Bay's goal was. And Brock Purdy ate him up when he had the opportunities, and that's good news. But I do think Seattle's going to make a concerted effort. I think 5-man fronts are what the 49ers are going to see for the considerable future. 5-2 is basically every single defense. It's what they're going to come into, and then a safety coming into the box at some point. It's just what 49ers have got to get used to. I think they could still run on Seattle if they do it, but it's definitely going to be an attempt to make the 49ers one-dimensional. So the onus is going to be on Brock Purdy and the weapons. But the good news is the yak attack was back. Get those guys the ball in space and let them create, and they did a great job. And if that's the formula moving forward, I know Brock Purdy and the 49ers playmakers are up to the task.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that stood out to me was Juwan Jennings manning that X role, that Brandon Ayuk, quote-unquote, number one wide receiver role. That dude cooked the hell out of Zion McCollum nonstop. And Zion McCollum was the number one corner from PFF going into that game. Oh, I don't know if he is. Actually, I want to look, because that dude just, he was put in a blender the entire game. So Zion McCollum goes into the game number one. He's now 7th. That's a big drop. That was all Juwan Jennings. And, like, Jennings ain't got Ayuk speed. He ain't got Ayuk moves. But that dude is just unconventional, southpaw type of fighter, where it's just like, man, everything I've learned doesn't work on this guy for some reason. Like, it's just weird. Now, there's going to be times where Juwan Jennings is not going to have that type of success, but I think he drew 3 penalties in coverage. His stat line was good, but, like, there were some plays where he cooked the corner so bad, Brock missed the throw because of how much separation he created. And so if you could kind of create that and continue that, then we'll see. Now, here's a good question from Raphael. Do you think the 49ers are lacking creativity in the red zone? I have my opinion, but I want to hear from Ant, because Ant's smarter than me. I'll let you go first. Let's see if we disagree. I want to fight a little, Ant.
I think at times they do. You know, I think that Kyle sometimes gets into where he wants to run more of a base look or a certain type of isolation look in the red zone. And so I do think that at times they don't run enough creativity. We haven't really seen any screen passes to George Kittle or finding Christian McCaffrey out of the backfield. And I know Tampa did a really good job. Todd Bowles called some good defensive plays to take some things away. They definitely wanted to take McCaffrey away when he was actually playing in the red zone. There's one drive he doesn't play at all, and the 49ers go nowhere. In fact, they go backwards. So I do think that there are moments where there's lack of creativity, and then I think sometimes there's just lack of execution. It's been a combination of both, and that's a real frustrating thing. But I'd love to see Kyle get a little bit more creative, and maybe he will now that he feels like he's got Christian McCaffrey, where he can put him in a bunch of different places and make it difficult on defenses.
You know, I think on one of the drives in the red zone that we didn't score a touchdown with CMC, CMC was wide open both plays, both pass plays, and Brock didn't look that way. And I think you have to kind of like, what is Brock, right? He is a systematic computer that has been uploaded with all of Shanahan's rules and regulations and whatever else. but he had to delete part of the programs for the checkdowns. I wish he wouldn't have. I wish he would have checked down to Mason and Isaac Garrido, but he refused to. Now you bring CMC back, and part of that program, the checkdown program, is just not functioning still. It's going to take time. But if you would have checked down to Christian McCaffrey on back-to-back plays, both probably would have been touchdowns. Instead, he looked out. A lot of it is the play. There's always going to be somebody open almost always in this scheme with these players. You got to match the reads with the progression and all that stuff. So it's not so much creativity. It's execution sometimes. And it's just stop making mistakes. You got to stop making mistakes. Train wreck in the red zone. I want to see Christian McCaffrey and Mason line up in the backfield sometimes. Motion CMC to the slot. Yes. And there were some of the plays where CMC lined up in the slot. That was fun. So let's get more of that, because wherever he goes, there was one play where they had Lavonte David on him, man coverage. And see, he covered him perfectly for the first count and a half. But then CMC said, see ya. It just like literally juked this dude out of his shoes. Lavonte David's going to the Hall of Fame. Juked him out of his shoes and created like 4 yard separation within like half a count. So the ball was out of Brock Purdy's in about 1.8. And CMC was covered for 1.5. But you could have your best player execute perfectly and still lose with Christian McCaffrey. So stick with CMC. Even if he looks covered early, he ain't staying covered. I think that's huge. Train wreck says a girl can dream. Yep, there we go. 21 personnel. I'm a 22 personnel I wouldn't be mad about. But I do want more receivers out there. So let's turn it back over to you, Ant. Any other takeaways that you have from the game before we jump to the second half? And I got way too many questions piled up already.
Yeah, and I'll stick kind of with that personnel thought process since it got brought up. Was the 49ers came out in 11 personnel in this football game and ran the ball pretty good on the opening drive with that 11 personnel. It could be something we see the 49ers go to. If you're going to load up boxes and you want to go 5 men across the board, okay, we'll spread you out. We feel like we've got an advantage blocking, because not only can Juwan Jennings block his butt off, but Ricky Pearsall did a pretty good job in this game too. So if you're going to block that well with the receivers, you have an advantage over nickel corners. They don't all fill and play the run game like Diamondre Lenore does. So there could be some opportunities to spread teams out, especially if they want to go with heavy boxes and heavy fronts. And I think that is something the Niners can lean on a little bit. I would even love to see a little bit of 4 wide receiver sets here and there. If you could get the right personnel on the field, it has to be the right guys though. But I think you don't really like pulling Christian McCaffrey or George Kittle off the field. So it's going to be more 11 than anything else, but a nice change up here and there never hurt anybody. If you need to give McCaffrey a blow or Kittle needs to go take care of his hamstring irritation for a couple plays, something like that. So I do like that 11 personnel against some of the teams that are going to be coming up.
Yeah. I think that's what they want to do. You know, you go the first 2 drives. I was really curious. So I was curious how much Christian McCaffrey was going to play. And I was curious how much number 15, Juwan Jennings, was going to be out there. The first 2 drives, neither one of them came off the field. But the surprise to me was number 14. Ricky Pearsall played every single snap, first and second drive. And so that's it there screaming to me like, okay, Eric Sauber has not been great, the tight end too. He really, really hasn't been. So they're starting to pull him back a little bit. And with Christian McCaffrey and all 3 of the wide receivers healthy, guess what? Kyle Juszczyk's snaps kind of got pulled back. That dude's been the starter plus 3rd down back while CMC was out and while one of the wide receivers was out. But now that you got Debo, now that you got Jennings, now that you got Pearsall, I think that 11 personnel, it reminds me. This is weird. Some people might not like what I'm about to say here. I feel like I'm watching a little bit of Sean McVay type tape where you just 11 is now your predominant base. And the personnel kind of dictates that, because CMC, Kittle, you don't want to take them off the field. Jennings, Debo, Pearsall, you don't want to take them off the field. Yeah, you splice in just a little bit of Eric Saubert and a little bit of Kyle Juszczyk, but I think that's going to be the formula moving forward. And for all the people talking about Mason, what's up, Sean? Good to see you, bud. He says, I just want to see more Mason. He's a punisher. Great to close out games. Great to open up games, all that stuff. But everybody keeps talking about this. Like, are you happy with the amount of workload Christian McCaffrey received in his first game back? Because it ain't going down. So are you cool with that?
I mean, I think this is kind of just the inevitable truth, right? That Christian McCaffrey is going to play a lot of plays. I think I was a little surprised he got as many touches. I thought it was going to be kind of in that 13 to 16 range, and he got a little bit more than that. So in that case, it surprised me. But I think this game could have been way less Christian McCaffrey and more Jordan Mason without a few blunders on special teams. If they don't have that punt situation happen where they lose the football, likelihood is the 49ers go down and score and change the game. And now you're relying on a run game, and you could put Jordan Mason in and you really go after it. But you don't want Jordan Mason on the field against Tampa Bay when they're loading the box and trying to just completely stuff you. It's not really the method to the madness. You want to throw the ball. You want to loosen them up with those quick throws. I think that's what the game plan was. I think we'll see a little bit more Mason here and there, but for the most part, get ready. It's going to be Christian McCaffrey. These are important games you have to win, and he's just a matchup problem. And even when he's not getting the football, you have to make sure you're focused on him. When you're getting two sets of eyes on him every single play, they're not on Juwan Jennings. They're not on Ricky Pearsall. It is opening up things for everybody else. So that is the effect, the gravitational pull of Christian McCaffrey that you don't get with Jordan Mason. But I like Jordan Mason running. I'd love for him to finish off games third and one, you know, get those physical runs. I just don't think we're going to see it as much because McCaffrey's so great.
Yep. Invader says, you know, I think they're trying to get Mason's shoulder healthy. I think that makes sense. The notorious GAV, you talk fullbacks, you're going to see the notorious GAV show up. Respect, brother. He says, does Juice need help after watching him get got by the Bucks linebacker? No, I tell people this all the time. And, you know, PFF grades are never going to do Kyle Juszczyk a favor. He gets the most difficult 10 out of 10 block every single play. George Kittle is second, but the amount that you ask Kyle Juszczyk to do is off the charts. And on top of that, now with Mitch Wisnowski out, yeah, you brought in a new punter. I'm telling you this too, Kyle Juszczyk's getting a lot of holding snaps on special. Like, that dude is asked to do everything. So he doesn't need more help. It's just what it is. It's got to be difficult. He's got to have positive games, but he was asked to do so much the first 8 weeks. Now he's back in the role that I think he should be, which is probably more of a 30 to 45% of snaps instead of 65% of snaps a game. That's where he's been since he's been with the Niners, and I think that's probably the best place. Do you agree on the Kyle Juszczyk usage altering with all these guys back?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you have to find your times where you play Kyle Juszczyk. And I think it's also going to be game by game, matchup by matchup. You know, I mean, we might see more Kyle Juszczyk this week with who the linebackers are for Seattle. So there's going to be different opportunities for Kyle Juszczyk. But I think that we're seeing a trend towards getting guys like Ricky Pearsall on the field because of how dynamic they could be in the passing game. And I think that that's something the 49ers haven't always had. But now they have three legitimate targets out there that are healthy at the moment. And it's George Kittle that's playing all pro level football. So I think it's just the way it is. And I'm not worried about Kyle Juszczyk. You talked about him getting tough tasks. How many fullbacks are handling defensive ends that are 275 pounds on the edge and being able to handle them? Or Levante David that's running full speed screaming at you? Sometimes you're going to lose. These are NFL players too. You can't be perfect. I think Juice has been so good. But yeah, they're going to get him sometime. That's just the way it is. And he's had some games this year where he struggled a little bit. So I think that people are questioning whether Father Time is catching up. But I think Kyle Juszczyk's going to be good to go, and I think playing less snaps will probably help him a lot.
I think so, too. The efficiency that he brings to the team, and there's just so much. But again, he's had one game in his normal role. You know what I mean? And so, kind of like Christian McCaffrey, wasn't stellar in the run game. That's just what it is. Just takes time. Now he's in a different role. So we'll see what that looks like. Now, we're going to transition to the other side. We're going to go all Seahawks talk as much as we can. I know the chat always distracts me. But if you didn't bet with us last week, you missed out. We hit 4 of 6, including our two big bets of the week. So if you're going to bet, this is how you do it.
You know football. You watch all the games. You know what's going to happen before it actually does. So why don't you put your knowledge to the test over at MyBookie, where you can bet on everything. Go to mybookie.ag. Use promo code 49ERS, 49ers, or scan this QR code next to me, and they're going to match your initial deposit. Put in 50, you get 50. Put in 100, you get 100, all the way up to $1,000. Plus, you can bet everywhere.
California, Texas, doesn't matter. I've been in California for years. I've used it for 6 straight years. Easy to get money in, easy to get money out, trusted source, and you can bet on anything you want. You want to bet on politics, any sport, you name it. They've got the casino if that's your thing. You name it, MyBookie is there for you. Now, make sure you use promo code 49ERS to get that double deposit. And MyBookie, bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with MyBookie. All right, shout out to Bobo. I asked Wayne the same question. Here's what Bobo said. So I got a hate question for you. Bobo says he hates the Seahawks. Used to wish them well, but after their behavior in the 2012 NFC Championship game, I lost all respect. Navarro Bowman's my second favorite player of all time. What they did there. Now, I understand it's a couple moronic fans, not the entire fan base. I have Seahawks friends. There's not many of them, but I do have a few. Where do the Seattle Seahawks rank on your all-hate team? Cowboys 1 for me, Seahawks 2. What about you?
Yeah, I'm on the same boat. I think maybe Giants or New York Giants are pretty close for me. I don't love all the Joe Montana stuff, the injuries. Those things really frustrated me. I never could stand the Big Tuna. So he's up there as well. I think recency, definitely the Seattle Seahawks are up there because I did not like the Legion of Boom. I was not a huge Richard Sherman fan, and then he became a 49er, and it kind of changed my mindset on him a little bit. It's amazing how that happens. Same thing with Jim Burt. You know, I couldn't stand him when he was with the Giants. He comes over to the 49ers. All of a sudden, hey, I love him. He's great. He's joking around with Joe Montana. It's all great. But, yeah, I think the Seattle Seahawks are one of the most hated. And what they did to Navarro Bowman definitely cemented that fact. Nobody likes the Seahawks. I don't like the Seahawks. I don't ever want them to win a game. It's hard rooting for them. I think I rooted for them a couple weeks ago against the Rams, and it almost made me sick. I can't do it. I don't like them.
That makes me very happy to hear all of those things. Shout out to my man, David Gill, one of the executive producers of the 40 Hours Rush podcast. He says, this is a no-nonsense game Sunday. No close calls, fourth quarter anxiety, just need a solid game, beginning to end, build up the momentum. Now, here's the thing. I don't know if the 49ers have that game yet this year. Maybe you talk about the Patriots. Are we going to see a game like that anytime soon, let alone versus the Seattle Seahawks?
Yeah, I think they need a 60-minute game where they just go out there and execute at a high level and really pour it on. I think they've been close. There's been moments, and all of a sudden something changes the trajectory of the game that really pushes them a way they didn't want to go, and then it kind of spirals out of control. They've got to figure out how to keep this thing in control. I think they're moving forward. They have the best opportunity because now Christian McCaffrey's back in the lineup, and you're starting to feel confident with Juwan Jennings back out there on offense. And then defensively, you're starting to feel some real chemistry with what Nick Sorens is doing compared to how like guys like Devondre Campbell are playing, Renardo Green helping on the outside, Malik Mustafa flying around. You're starting to get some things going on there. I thought that in this game versus Tampa Bay, though they were making mistakes on the final drive, they were flying around, putting pressure on Baker Mayfield, and I thought that was a good thing to see. They were trying to close that thing out. There's a lot of will left in this team. If they can ever put 60 minutes together, they can beat anyone that the NFL has to offer. They're that good of a football team, but they got to go put it together. And so far, we haven't seen 60 minutes, and it hasn't been close.
Yeah, and even though, man, offensively, you dominated the Bucs, but you didn't score touchdowns. Defensively, you dominated the Bucs, but you didn't get turnovers. And then special teams kind of evened that one out. Like, you controlled the game. In the two most important phases of the game, you marched all the way up and down the field, all four quarters. You held them to barely over 200. They had 100 passing yards. You know how hard that is to do in today's NFL? Like, the game was controlled, but you're just not putting the punctuation on the end of the accomplishments, and that's kind of who this 49ers team is. You know, you've had 6 terrible fourth quarter games. We're 29th in the NFL in fourth quarter scoring defense. We're giving up on average over 9 points a game every single fourth quarter. That's not championship level football. Doesn't mean you can't get there. It just means you're not there yet. That's why you're a 5-4 football team. So if you get to answer some of those calls, I think that's huge. Now, I got asked real quick. Somebody asked me, oh, here it is, trade wreck. I would love to know your take on Renardo Green. You talked about how good we've been in coverage. The 49ers have been running cover three more than any other coverage. We're sitting at 30% of our called coverages are cover three. A lot of first and second down cover three. I think that's our best coverage package right now. And I also think that's the best coverage package against, you know, this Grubbs offense of the Seattle Seahawks, where they're stretching the field vertical, man. They did it at Washington. They've been doing it all. Like, they're running vertical routes. Geno completed, I think, one out of seven 20-plus yard throws against us in week six. So my question to you, I want more cover three. Is there a certain type of coverage that you care more about, you know, this week that you would like to see more of from the 49ers?
I mean, I think it's mainly just making sure you keep the top on. You don't want to let DK Metcalf, who's going to be healthy, get vertical. And so, I mean, that might make it the most comfortable for the 49ers being in that cover three. And I think that they have looked good. You know, when you see Renardo Green and you see Diama Lenore and their bail technique, they just seem like they feel very comfortable in it. We know that that is something that the 49ers did a lot in the past, and it's nice to see kind of a return to that. But I would like to see them mix in some palms as well this week. And I think that those two things, keeping DK Metcalf from stretching the field, keeping Jaxon Smith-Njigba going over the middle and not allowing him to get that slot fade, which Diamondre Lenore has done a really good job taking away. But that is a staple for them. So there's going to be some tough things. I'd love to see them mix it up a little bit, confuse Geno, because – even though Baker Mayfield got confused every once in a while, he doesn't get tripped up as much as Geno. Geno gets confused on coverage a lot. So disguising coverages this week could be huge. I'd love to see them show some cover three looks with a little bit of a bail look and then all of a sudden play something else. I think that could be huge for them. So, yeah, I like the cover three this week, but I like a few confusing things as well. Getting Geno to think. If he's thinking, he's sitting in the pocket, that means we could probably get to him because their offensive line is not that good.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, again, just the confidence that you have. You just signed Demo. God, I freaking love that. But the fact that he's going to be like across the way from Renardo Green, I have all the confidence in the world in him. And, you know, train wreck follow-up question, if we run cover three, can the Seahawks attack the double seams? They don't do that often. They really, really don't. Every single coverage has kind of a vulnerability to it. That's going to exist. You look at the big plays we made against the Seahawks back in week six, cover four, cover three, cover six. That's where it was. This off coverage, you pounce because Geno's Geno. And he's going to have two or three of those mistakes where he just sells a ball or panics or whatever else. And so I think that's where that is. So, yeah, there's always vulnerabilities with every coverage. You can beat it on the board always. But you want to take away what the team does best, which I think is vertical routes. You know, even JSN, like his best route is the slot fade. Well, the slot fade, that stresses outside the numbers. We were able to stop that with Diamondre Lenore for the first time maybe ever since Shanahan and this scheme has showed up. So that's why I like cover three a little bit more. But even when we were in man, we were able to stop it. So let's turn it over to you, Ant. What's something you want to see in the Seahawks game this week?
Yeah, I'm going to start on offense. And I want to see Christian McCaffrey against a linebacker core that is completely different now. They've got Tyrese Knight. He's going to be starting. Everyone probably remembers him from the draft breakdowns. He was a fourth-round pick out of UTEP. He's a good player, but he's going to get asked to do a lot. They have cut both of their free agent signings. Actually, they traded away one to bring in somebody else, but this is a matchup problem for Seattle. I don't like Seattle's chances of stopping Christian McCaffrey. They were going to have a problem with Jordan Mason and Isaac Arendo. Christian McCaffrey is going to be a real problem. So I look for Kyle Shanahan to try to isolate some of those linebackers with McCaffrey. But when they try to play McCaffrey with the safety or with some or a nickel corner or somebody else, expect George Kittle or Deebo Samuel to get a favorable matchup against one of those linebackers. So I think that's going to be a key, is attack those linebackers and put a lot of pressure on them, because it just has not been a good position for them this season.
It's funny, you know, they traded for Ernest Brown, which I do think he's better than the linebackers they had. But I remember his first start against the 49ers like 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago with the Rams. Shanahan torched that dude. Like, so he's seen us several times. And shout out to McDonald. He knew the linebackers he had weren't working. So he's like, this ain't it. We got to change it. let's see how it's going to go. You know, my thing that I wrote down, my last note that I wanted to see is more cover three. And then I also want to see CMC and Debo in the backfield. Those, everybody wants Mason and CMC in the backfield, which I love. But just from a coverage standpoint, when those two guys are in the backfield, the safeties and linebackers are just like, what the hell am I supposed to do? What do I do? You can flare them both out to the flats. That opens the middle of the field. You can play action one, the other one go over the top first. Like, there's just so much. We did it a lot last year, and I felt like we had a lot of success. I want Debo and CMC in the backfield at the same time to, again, just mess with these guys. You got two new linebackers. There's no way they're going to have everything installed. There's no way. Last time we played them, they didn't have CMC. They've got two new linebackers. Ah, man, I'm excited. I'm excited right here. Ernest Jones, definitely better than Dotson. They upgraded, but CMC will still eat. Yeah, I think they upgraded one. I don't think they upgraded two. You know what I mean? Like, I take Jerome Baker and Dotson over their new cat that they got in there that you were talking about from UTEP. Go Miners. So we'll see there. We'll see there. So let's go back to you. Last one. What is another thing that you want to see against the Seattle Seahawks?
I want to see pressure. You know, I mean, I think that you can dial it up against Geno Smith this week. I don't think the offensive line is very good for Seattle. Laken Tomlinson has not been good for them. Their center, Connor Williams, hasn't been great for them this season. There are opportunities to get pressure on them. And so I'd love to see the sort of thing that we saw from Nick Sorensen down the stretch where he was putting pressure on Baker Mayfield. He was bringing extra blitzers. I think those are opportunities. Basically, we talked about the deep routes for Seattle, wanting to get the ball down the field. Well, that gives more time for you to be able to get home. So go ahead and get pressure on Geno Smith. We've seen him make mistakes when he gets pressure anywhere near his feet. He will throw an interception. You know, Malik Mustafa had, you know, a big interception because of that the last time they played. And I think there's opportunities to get home. So be aggressive, put the pressure on Geno Smith and make him beat you. He's not Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield is far superior. They held Baker Mayfield to 100 yards passing. Now, Seattle does have a lot better weapons on the outside than Baker Mayfield had. I'll give him that. But I just think Geno Smith is prone to mistakes, and the 49ers usually force him. It's just inevitable. He's going to find D'Amber Lenore for a nice interception in this game.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, he leads the NFL in interceptions, and he's coming off a bye week. Like, it's what it is. I think Bosa's going to play. Yeah, Bosa's playing. Shanahan said he played through it last week. There's no reason why he wouldn't this week. Hopefully he gets a little bit of rest, a little bit, you know, gets better. Bosa's going to be excited because you're going against Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas. You're not going against Tristan Wirfs this week. So I think that's huge. That goes with the pressure thing. Tomlinson has struggled his entire career whenever he hasn't been with the 49ers. He was not good with the Jets. He was not good. Was he with the Panthers? No, Lions. We got him from the Lions. Originally, and he hasn't been good with the Seahawks either. Yeah, he's currently the 32nd ranked guard. All right. He's doing a little bit better. But, we'll see. Hopefully Evan Anderson keeps playing the way he's playing. I love how he's split the double teams. I think that he is just a plus player. And I think Anderson going off, he's never going to be a stat guy, whatever else. But, man, he makes the linebacker's life so easy whenever he's out there. And the fact that number 69, Evan Anderson, got in there on the second drive, I was just like, yes. Like, I freaking love that. Him and Sam O, I was screaming their praises all year. And to see him go out there and just continue to be good, I freaking love it. Ah, makes me excited. Great question from Lori here. What is your report card on our defensive coordinator halfway through the season?
I think I would give him probably like a B-. I think that there are some areas he needs to clean up. I think that the red zone defense needs to get a little bit better. I think we saw shades of that against Tampa Bay, who came in, you know, 70% of the time they were scoring touchdowns. They got held to 50%. Could be a little bit better there. I thought third down, they were phenomenal against Tampa Bay. So we got to see that trend. Those are two areas for sure that the defense needs to be a little bit better. You brought up the fourth quarter scoring. That's slamming the door on teams down the stretch. I think that's something as well. But I think that we've seen a steady improvement from him in his feel of what his players can do. And then also the coverages and the scheme and when to blitz and when not to. It feels like he's getting better and better. And I like the trend of this defense. So I'll give him a B minus. If someone wanted to argue it's lower, I think that would be okay. But it's definitely not been great, but it hasn't been bad either.
Yeah, I think I've been the most critical of them, of a lot of people, which is weird because I'm usually like the positive guy until I meet Ant. And then I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not. But I would have probably said C minus before the bye week. But after this Bucks game, still giving up a lot of points in the fourth, I'm going to bump it up a little bit to C. Trainwreck says D minus. Kyle says C minus. Invader agrees with you. I'm going to go a solid C grade. But it's a constant room for improvement. He's so new. And so the little wrinkles that we're seeing, I'm like, all right, there we go. Because through the first 6 weeks, we were so transparent. Every single third down was the exact same coverage. And it was just like, quit telegraphing and showing everybody what you're doing. Lori, to his own question, says C plus. So you're right in between me and Ant, which I think is a good place because I think that's good. We're kind of covering both those things. Next question from Trainwreck. How close do you think we are from seeing Dre Greenlaw back?
I think it's going to be Buffalo, Chicago, probably that kind of stretch right there. I think they'll open up his practice window here in the next week or two, and then we'll start seeing Dre Greenlaw ramp it up. And I do think he's going to get a lot of practice time. I don't think it's going to be like McCaffrey where he comes back after 1 week of practice. I think they're going to work him back in for a while to make him feel comfortable. So I would say Buffalo would be the earliest and Chicago would probably be the latest. So that stretch right there, I think we'll see Dre Greenlaw back. So by the 1st of December, we're going to have Dre back, and he's going to be out there making things happen. And you want to talk about intensity and changing a defense, Dre Greenlaw will do that.
Gosh, imagine we get him and Hufanga back. And you have to assume with both players, they return to pre-injury status, which is the question mark. We are assuming and you are hoping that's up to the 49ers. Every player comes back, they're going to struggle a little bit. But the goal, and I think that this is what's important, you have time. If they come back December 1, December 8, you still have, you know, after that Bears game, you still got Rams, Dolphins, Lions, Cardinals. You have a full month of playing time to get to where you were before the playoffs. That's assuming you're in the playoffs. So if you can get to that point, those two players, and, you know, is Hufanga coming back? You need them bad. Jair Brown is a major weakness. We talked about that earlier. I wish you wouldn't. But, yes, even if you just put him on special teams, even if Hufanga comes back with a club or a cast or whatever, you just put him on all the special teams. Yes, that is worth an IR to return spot as a special teams only and then a backup safety player. I personally think he is better than any safety we have. And I would play Hufanga and Malik Mustafa if Hufanga is back to Hufanga. But you got to see what that is in practice. You got to see what that looks like. We'll see what it is. Do you agree your safety? Let's assume Hufanga comes back to what he is. What would your safety depth chart be, Ant?
Yeah, I think at this point it has to be Talon Hufanga over Jair Brown and Hufanga and Malik playing together. And, you know, Malik has really come on over the last few weeks. I think before that, you would have questioned whether they wanted to go with, you know, Tashaun Gibson if he would have been around. I think, but now Malik has been flying around, making plays. The mistakes have been minimized. He's for sure one of those safeties. And I think that Jair Brown has left himself vulnerable because he's been ineffective and then just not consistent for the most part in games. So Hufanga would be a huge upgrade. His ability to read things before they happen, pre-snap reads, is through the roof. I think that would be a huge addition if they can get him to come back, but they've got to feel comfortable with him wearing a cast and playing. And what would that do to his tackling ability? I think that's the biggest question mark.
Yeah, that's something we got to see. Man, this has been fun, Ant. What is on the agenda for the rest of this weekend? The 49ers cutback. You guys got to go follow them. What else do we got this week, Ant?
Yeah, we got the Madden sim, of course. That'll be coming out tomorrow. The game preview show, that'll be coming out as well. So, yeah, come check them out, you know, see what you have to say. I do original commentary on the Madden, which makes it a little bit different than the normal Madden stream. So come give it a look. It's always entertaining. And, you know, last week it came down to a Jake Moody field goal to win the game. And that's what it came down to in this game. Now, the score was a little bit different, but there's a lot of similarities at times, and it's kind of interesting.
Do the refs screw us continuously on Madden as well? Is that a facet of the game? I'm just curious.
Luckily not. Yeah, luckily not. Yeah, you know, you don't see, you know, Fred Warner getting tackled in the hole or Diamond getting hit from behind. But yeah, luckily, no, the referees don't do that. Occasionally, the referees show up, and that's when you really get mad at Madden. Are you like, are you kidding me? Come on.
Yeah. That's what it is, guys. Go check it out. Y'all are the best there is. That's going to end it for our show today. Ant, you are the best as always. And for everybody else out there, you know what it is. And until next time, stay strong, faithful.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.